to Rabbi Jason Weiner, who will be speaking now about cremation and the chaplain's perspective. Rabbi Weiner, thank you for joining us.
All right, thank you very much. Actually, a lot of overlap, I think, between our conversations, so we'll be able to reference some of that. It's quite an honor to be with you all on this important day, and to be with Amitai, who just does such incredible work. I'm such a fan, being able to see firsthand the profound and impactful work that Amitai does every day all around the world. And so I thought we'd share with you some, you know, an important, you know, difficult issue that we struggle with in the hospital, and is an increasing issue. And that's the issue of cremation. What do I mean that it's increasing? So I began as a chaplain in 2007. At that time, 34.2% of deaths in the United States resulted in cremation, 34.2%. Just to give you an impression how much it's increasing, by 2021, it was 57.2%, the majority. And then 2022, 59%. And it's the predictions are that in a couple of years, it's going to reach 65%. In Canada, by the way, it's up to already almost 78%. So cremation is a rapidly developing form of disposing of one's remains. And it's something that Jews struggle with a lot because of the prohibitions and Jewish values, which we'll discuss now. In fact, I'll tell you a story because people struggle with this quite a bit, especially when you have different perspectives amongst family members over whether or not they want their loved one to be cremated, or following the wishes of their loved one who asked to be cremated. It leads to lots of family strife, unfortunately. So I remember one encounter that I had once where I was called in here in the hospital to say a blessing, a pre-op blessing. The request was for a prayer before surgery, which is a rather common request as a chaplain. And I went to the patient in pre-op, and when I walked in, there was a woman and her daughter, and I introduced myself as the rabbi in the hospital, and they immediately gave me this kind of dirty, angry look and said, like, "We didn't ask for a rabbi. Who sent you here? What are you doing here?" Like, they made it clear to me that I wasn't so welcome. So when I got that feeling, I was like, you know, I don't need to be here. I don't need to force anything on you. And so I said, you know, I was just making my rounds, just came to wish you well, and best wishes to you. Nice to meet you. And as I'm trying to leave, then another man begins to walk into their pre-op area and says, this man had a big yarmulke and sits us out and a big beard. And he says, "Oh, the rabbi's here. Baruch Hashem, rabbi, I call for you. Come on in." And I see the daughter, you know, rolls her eyes when she realizes he's the one that made the referral. And I'm realizing, okay, there's complicated family dynamics going on here, and I don't want to be thrust into the middle of this. But so the daughter says, "Oh, figures that he sent you here. Yeah, you know, we didn't request a rabbi. It's okay. You can be on your way." So I kind of looked at the son like, yeah, you know, if they don't want me here, I don't need to be here. I'm not forcing religion on anybody. And trying to make my exit. And the son says, "Okay, bye." As I'm leaving now, the son says, "Oh, wait, rabbi. While you're here, while we have you, can you just settle a small family dispute we're having for us for a minute?" So I'm thinking, oh boy, this, here we go. And he says, and this is now, keep in mind, all in front of the patient who's literally about to be wheeled into surgery. So the son says, in front of the patient, his mother and his sister, "Rabbi, can you please tell my mother and my sister that if my mother is indeed cremated after she dies, as are her wishes, that she will go to hell. Can you please tell her, Rabbi?" So I'm like, oh boy, you know, I'm not in the custom of telling people before they go into surgery that, you know, this is going to happen to them. And, you know, I didn't feel comfortable with that. And I was like, you know, I'm sure it's I understand this is a minor surgery. I give you a blessing. The surgery should go well. And we could talk afterwards. If you want to have conversations about these types of things, let's talk after the surgery. So the mother and the sister kind of nod their heads like, yeah, good idea. And the son, just when I think I got out of this, says, "Oh, great, look what the rabbi didn't say. And look what he will never say, which is that he did not say cremation is okay by Judaism. Right, Rabbi? You didn't say it's okay, did you?" So I'm like, gosh, what are you trying to do to me? So I said, no, that's true. I'm not going to say cremation is allowed. I'm also not necessarily going to say that they're going to, you know, go to hell. I don't know if I'd use that terminology, and I don't know if this is the time to talk about this right now. Maybe we should put this off for later. So he says, "Okay, fine, Rabbi, let's discuss this later, but thank you for clarifying for me." Of course, both sides think that, you know, now I've justified their side, and she goes to surgery. But now I was stuck. because the rabbi is like, okay, I'm going to spend some time with my mother, but then I want to talk to you later. And the daughter was like, yeah, you know, can I talk to you also later? And it brings up all these kinds of questions. You know, first of all, is cremation prohibited? Indeed. And why? Must one bury the ashes in a Jewish cemetery, or may they be buried in a Jewish cemetery? Do they have to, they have the status of a body? May a rabbi officiate the funeral or have anything to do with the cremains, as we call it, the cremation ashes? Are the members of the family obligated to observe the laws of mourning? And if so, when does that mourning period begin? You're right, from when the ashes are burnt, or from when they've just given them over to the crematoria, which is what it's called. I mean, it's obviously not pleasant in Jewish circles to refer to that, but that's what it is. So I just want to show you a few sources and then take you through the history of this issue in Jewish history, because it's fascinating, and I think it really helps with understanding it. So here's the basic sources from our tradition. It really goes to a source in the Torah, in Deuteronomy, where the Torah says it's talking about a capital punishment. Now, the Torah mandates, in certain cases, capital punishment. The rabbis limited that in Jewish law significantly, almost to the point of completely eliminating capital punishment in Jewish law. But in the Torah itself, there is such a thing as capital punishment. And when the Torah refers to capital punishment, in the book of Deuteronomy, it says, here for you in the English and the Hebrew, when a person has a capital sentence, they are killed and they are hung on a tree. That was what they did. They hung them on a tree. But then the Torah says, do not leave their body hanging on the tree. What should you do? Actually, you have to bury them right away, that day. Why? You must bury them right away, because that person, doesn't matter that they were someone who did something so evil that it deserves a capital punishment, they are all people, and they included, are created in the image of God. Leaving a corpse to decompose and decay in such a undignified way, hanging on a tree, is considered an affront to the image of God, and therefore there's a prohibition against leaving the body hanging. So now there seems to be, from this verse, both a commandment to bury and bury right away, and also a prohibition against leaving them unburied. As the Mishnah, the second source there, says, Kol ha-malinas meso over belo tase. If you leave a body hanging out, it is violating a prohibition from the Torah. Now, elsewhere in the Talmud, it says, remez likavura min haTorah minayin. It refers to burial as a remez, as a hint. So some of the rabbis said, you know, it doesn't seem to imply that it's actually a Torah obligation to bury, but it's like, it's hinted at. And Nachmanides asks an interesting question there, by the way. He says, you know, ma eitz shehu nivel af kol shehu nivel. We're talking here about just like hanging someone and leaving them hanging on a tree. That's considered a disgrace, a disrespect to the body. He says that applies to any form of disgrace to a body is prohibited. And it tells you the example of lomar lacha, af al pi shezet roi lenavlo. Even though it might be considered, or someone might think that it's proper to let someone be disgraced this way, legodol cheto, because they did such a horrible sin, lo tase ken ki kilas elokim toli, do not do so, because that is an affront to God to disgrace the body of even an evil person. So anyone. So is any form of burial acceptable? When it says burial, what does that mean? It seems to imply, as long as they're not hanging on the tree, what if you just put them into some kind of aron, some kind of casket, and put them in the basement? Is that enough? And that's what the Aruch HaShulchan asks. He says, El Delefi HaSeichel, it should imply, Dai L'Sogu Ba'aron Shel Barzel, you can just put them in an iron casket, U'Lanicho Be'ezin Martef, and just put them in the basement. That should be enough. He says, no. There's another verse. Of HaTorah Kepidah Sheguf Ha'adam Yeitamun Bekarka. The Torah says that a person's body should be buried in the ground. Because the Torah says in Genesis, Ve'la'afar Tashuv, you will return from the ground you came, from the ground you will return to Lechain, Hanosein Mesu Ba'aron Velo Kavru Bekarka. Therefore, if a body is put into a casket but not buried in the ground, Over Mishum Baal Talim, they violate their prohibition of not burying the person. And then there's one more source in this regard, which is the Talmud says, and this is actually a source we also used in the conversation about autopsies. The Talmud has a story where a child inherited from his father. So it says, Maisa b'Bnei Brak. The story happened in B'Nei Brak. This is a Gemara Maseches Bava Basra. In B'nai Brak, it was Be'echad Shemachar B'nichse Aviv Emes. So this child inherited their father's possessions. Then they gave it away. And then they died. Ubo B'nai Mishpach V'ir Aru Lomar. And then they complained. They said, wait a second. He didn't have the right to sell it. He was just a child. He wasn't an adult yet. The only way you know how to, it says B'shas Miso, he was a child. The only way you could prove that is to see if he had reached puberty yet. So they asked, Ubo V'shalu Es Rabbi Akiva, they asked, Ma'o L'bodko, could we dig him up? Could we retrieve him? Could we exhume the body just to check him? They're not even in this case doing any kind of examination on him. They just want to dig him up to check him and then rebury him. So he says, Iyatem Rishayim Lenovlo. Nope, you cannot, this would be considered disgracing the body. You cannot dig him up. And the commentary says, I put there below, that it's any kind of bezayon, that's considered a bezayon. Any, even not just hanging on the tree, but any kind of bezayon, as the Ramban said, is forbidden. And therefore, you are not allowed to even dig up the body. Now, this seems to imply, these sources we just looked at, that there is a commandment in the Torah of burial. There's a prohibition against not burying. There's also a prohibition against disgracing a body. That's the discussion, right? That's what we've seen from the Torah so far. There has been some critique of this. Some have asked, well, wait a second, is that so simple, what you've just said? And I know Rabbi Brody was just mentioning the tragic story of Shaul HaMelech, when Shaul fell on his sword to protect himself from being murdered by the Plishtim. So when Shaul died, here's the story. The Plishtim came and they wanted to, you know, do whatever they wanted with his body. They now have the Jewish king and they can make all kinds of games with him and destroy him and embarrass him. So what did he was in fact hung on a wall and his head was, you know, his head was hung on the wall and his body's flapping over the wall there. And so when the residents, it says here, Yishma'u elav Yoshvei Yavesh Gilad. The residents of Yavesh Gilad heard what was happening. Es asher asu plishtim l'Shaul. What the plishtim were doing to Shaul. So the soldiers went all night and they went in with strength, they fought, and they took the body back. Both his body and his sons. Gvias Shaul, as Gvias Banav, Michomas Beishan, from the walls of Beishan where he was hanging. Vyavu Yavesha, they went back to Yavesh, Vyasrafuo Sham, and then they burnt it there. They burnt the body of Shaul. V'yichu es matzmoseim, and then afterwards they took the bones. V'yikvru tachas ha'esha b'yavesh, and then they took him and they mourned then. V'yitzmu shivas yamim, and then they mourned and fasted for 7 days. Now it says he's to imply that they burnt his body. It almost implies some kind of cremation. However, the Radak there and many commentaries explain that what was happening was that this was done for his honor because his flesh was now rotting. And he was so disgraced that they felt if they burn off the flesh, it now has, you know, maggots eating at it and it's smelling horribly. If they could just burn off the flesh, then they will bury the bones. But they did bury the bones, as the Psukim say clearly. By the way, this is also, they also mentioned, some people will say, look, there's a tshuva of the Rashba. I brought here a quote from the Radvaz. He quotes the Rashba, one of the Rishonim in 13th century Spain, that he says, you are allowed, here was the question, Umizayatam, Reisi mishat tziva b'shas moso shiitnu seed betoch kivro. Some people asked for lime to be put into their casket with them after they died with their corpse. Kadeshit akel habasar mehera. So that their body, their corpse, will decompose faster. And he writes there, he says, afa davar mutar. This is technically allowed by halacha. So some asked, how could that be allowed? But the same thing happens here. You see, if you read the whole piece, I'm not going to go into it in detail now, but that they only did so when they needed the flesh to decay so they could transport the body elsewhere where they had to do so just the bones. But he says clearly that this was just to make the flesh decay and not the bones. But we'll come back to that. So that's some of the history of just the topic of burial in Jewish law and how it's relevant for the cremation story. But now to properly understand the story of cremation, and the way the rabbis have dealt with it, we need to study a little bit of history. Now I'm going to take you through a little bit of a history tour of modern Jewish history. I did my master's at YU in modern Jewish history, and we covered a lot of this. And then we had a lecture here at Cedars-Sinai from Professor Adam Furziger from Bar Ilan University, who filled in a lot of the gaps here and really helped me understand this. And so I'm relying on some of his research and what you read in the Tshuvas that I will share with you momentarily. But here's what happened. You don't find a lot of discussion throughout Jewish history of the topic of cremation. You have a few sources that I just shared with you that are relevant for the conversation, but you don't find a lot of people talking about, like, is cremation allowed? Is cremation not allowed? What do the rabbis say? Because it wasn't really happening so much. So you go thousands of years with very little overt discussion. You have hints at it, which what I just showed, I think it was hints. I didn't think you saw anywhere in what I just showed you where it says, the Torah says cremation is forbidden. You do not have such a line anywhere in classic Jewish literature. You have a lot of evidence to work. What happened then was that cremation technology emerged in Europe in the 1870s. And not just the technology, but a social movement that supported it. What basically was happening in Europe in the 1870s was a movement that saw cremation as a sort of enlightened rejection of irrational religious concepts, such as, you know, the world to come and resurrection of the dead. And this ideology was gaining popularity in European society. They saw that cremation as being, like, very modern and scientific and hygienic and dignified. And it swept the European world. In fact, it swept the Protestant world in particular for several decades. And they said, you know, if God can resurrect the dead from bones, he can do so from ashes. And so in 1878, the first cremation facility opened up in Germany, 1878. In 1918, that facility was doing over 14,000 cremations a year. And as, by the way, as Jews, we talk about this in Germany, they're perfecting this technology just in time, unfortunately, to then this is what they use on our ancestors in the concentration camps. I mean, this is relevant for the conversation, but it was all being developed right here in the turn of the century, just, you know, 40 years before the Holocaust, and it was gaining popularity. So religious communities were responding, because now this is new technology. When something's new, just like now, everyone's talking about, like, AI. What does our religion say about AI? At that time, everyone was saying, what does our religion say about cremation? In 1886, the Catholic Church unilaterally forbade cremation by a papal decree, and they even denied burial to anyone who was cremated. If anyone said they'd be cremated, they said you cannot be buried by the Catholic Church unless you repent before death and then are not cremated. 1898, the Protestant Church then comes out vociferously against it. In the 1890s, you have many Italian rabbis and German rabbis beginning to opine about this. And in 1901, a full-length pamphlet was published on the topic by a rabbi, Yisrael Chaim Braun, in Germany. It was called Beit Yisrael, and it cited many, many different post-scheme and opinions on the issue. And this was, like, kind of all the rage, so to speak. And what Professor Furziger pointed out was that, you know, most of the rabbis at this time felt that the ashes do not have the status of a body, and they forbade cremation and the burial of the cremains. They said, there's no reason to bury it. It's not a body. And this is an act of being Porish Min HaTzibur, of separating from the Jewish community, and therefore you cannot bury them in a Jewish cemetery. You cannot give them any rites like Tahara, Tachrichim, the shrouds, you know, and the washing. You can't mourn for them. They have to be totally excluded. This was their way of showing that this is the severity of the sin and they have to be buried elsewhere. This was similar to, by the way, there similar decrees happened when it came to circumcision. And also, by the way, there have been similar decrees in Jewish history about suicide. Now, the rabbis unanimously, for the most part, said, you know, suicide, I mean, someone dies by suicide, we can recognize that that was not an act of actually heresy, of them saying that they are doing so because they don't believe in the world to come or anything. It happened because of mental health struggles. And therefore, we can have compassion on them and not blame them for it. And therefore, suicide victims, people who do die by suicide, are buried in Jewish cemeteries. But this discussion has come up. It comes up today, by the way, in Jewish communities with those who die from physician aid in dying. Is that considered a suicide by which one cannot be buried in a Jewish cemetery? And that's for a whole other conversation. We can talk about that another time. But this was the discussion that was happening. There was a rabbi who was very forceful at that time, publishing that pamphlet, named Rabbi Meir Lerner. He wanted to prohibit even burial of the ashes from cremation, and that generated a lot of pushback. Because his argument was, if the Christians are so adamantly opposed, we should be as well. Why are we less concerned? We also believe in the importance of burial. And he argued that Jews who violate Torah are supposed to be cast out. That was his perspective. And when it came to, you know, people don't observe Shabbos, don't observe the Sabbath, in the 1860s, there had already been a whole discussion. And Rabbi Yaakov Ettlinger, the Binyan Tzion, and others had already kind of ruled that they don't really have heretical intentions anymore. They were like a Tinoch Shenishba. They were just like, they didn't know better. And so you don't have to exclude them. But this Rev Lerner, he didn't think that people who are cremated fall into that category, because he thought that cremation is worse than violating the Sabbath, because everyone violates the Sabbath. Like, that's normal. Like, so many people violate the Sabbath. How can you blame someone who grows up in such a society where everyone violates the Sabbath? But he argued that they still have some Jewishness left. And the way that's finally expressed is in how they're buried. That's like the last vestige of Jewish identity, so to speak. And so there's some connection. And he felt like if they're cremated, that they trample the basic principles of Jewish faith, and burial is the minimal thing that one keeps one part of the community, and doing so has gone too far. But this was the debate, right? It was going back and forth. Others disagreed, and they felt that, you know, they can also be considered, you know, Tinuk Shanishpa. They don't know that's forbidden. It's also becoming a popular cultural phenomenon that people are doing it. And how can you say this is so much worse? You should be able to provide burial. And now we do provide burial, as I said, for people who die by suicide or don't circumcise their children. Or do we say that, no, even non-observant Jews don't cremate and therefore it's worse? So this was the big debate. Actually, some historians, just a side point, argue that cremation did in fact distance people from the church, because part of what was going on here was a struggle for power, meaning they no longer became dependent on the church functionaries or religious services, and perhaps the fear of punishment in the afterlife kept people religious, and they needed the church for burial services, and this was an act of casting that off, which was why the church, and possibly also the rabbis, who also controlled their Jewish cemeteries, felt like this was especially an act of totally distancing oneself from the community. And they argued that this policy of allowing burial in a separate section might preserve the role of the Jewish community and one last of the last institutions that remained relevant, which was Jewish cemeteries. So this was also part of the behind the scenes, right? So, and also, by the way, if you don't bury the ashes, who's that punishing? Is it punishing the deceased or the relatives of the deceased who didn't choose this? So this was the big debate. And I want to show you the source for the most prominent discussion of this, which was one of the most prominent rabbis of that time, especially in Germany, which was Rabbi David Zvi Hoffman. He wrote a responsa book called Melamed Lehoil. And in 1903, when he wrote his responsa, when he published it, and he wrote that we should not allow any burial of ashes. We should not allow it at all. And let me show you some of his reasoning, because it's just fascinating, and it gives a good insight into what was happening in the debates amongst the rabbis at that time, when cremation was really becoming so popular. And obviously they didn't have the context of the Holocaust yet at this time. So he goes through and describes a little bit of the what we've discussed already, that there's a commandment to bury the dead. And he says, you know, you also have to bury in the ground, right? And then he says something interesting. So I told you when I showed you the sources before that, you know, it's not so clear that there's a specific prohibition against cremation and the specific requirement of burial. It's just, we said, it's a remez. It's a hint in the Torah. So he writes, anu, you see where I put the underline here, says, kvar anu mechuyavim lasosu l'chayim, kol mitzvos haTorah al pi haPerushim shemasru lanu chazal. The way that the rabbis told us, and the rabbis told us, has to be buried in the ground. Someone might come along and say, like, oh, I can come up with a new way of burial. And maybe cremation, you could argue, fits those, because cremation, they're not hanging on a tree anymore. The body's not being left out, and I'll bury the ashes. And what's so bad about that? And maybe this is back ash to ash, dust to dust. He says, no, that's not the way the rabbi said it. We have to follow the way the rabbi said it. And he says, she'ilule anu hochim b'ze'achra pshat, if we didn't follow the simple explanation of these verses, she'nir le'pashut le'meforshim chadashim chasushan, and we just follow these new ideas, mitzvah shchita ka'alacha v'isurei treif, he says, v'nistor kol das Yisrael, we would undermine the whole religion. Al ha-yesod derech mashal, for example, the foundation of the religion began, derech mashal, necho basu b'chalav, we start eating meat and milk together. Why? Because the Torah just says, just as you can't cook a kid in its mother's milk. But we've understood that to mean much more. So he says, if we start following like the ways we want to interpret verses, we're going to undermine the entire religion. So we have to follow the way the rabbis understood burial always, which was burying the whole body in the ground. And then he goes more clearly, so what's wrong with cremation? He says, Davar Baruch Asar Liyisrof Meis Yisrael. No, and for that, in fact, it's forbidden to cremate a Jewish body. Why? Two reasons why. Chada, first one, so what we saw before, you have to bury right away. You are actively not burying the person. And not even to mention that the ashes now don't require burial. You can't really fulfill proper burial with ashes. Even if you would say that the ashes require burial, the Torah says you have to bury the entire body, not part of it, unless of course you only have part of it, but you should bury the whole thing. And he says, separately, you cannot burn any human. Now he's talking not just about Jews, by the way. Why? He says, remember the verse we talked about was someone who was convicted of a crime. It said, it's the image of God. The image of God is being disgraced. And all humanity is created in the image of God. Right? He says, Shazen nechshav hein al piyam, mikra v'hein al piya Talmud, both in the Torah and the Talmud, nivul gadol lames. The rabbis considered burning to be a disgrace. Asur l'nav lames. And we know we can't disgrace the mace. How do we know this? Because the Torah, the Tanakh tells us, halo tirisha navi, the navi says in Amos, Choshev zos lepesha Moav, that the people of Moav, shesarif atzmos melech Edom, the people of Moav burned the body, the bones of the king of Edom. And the prophet said that that was a sin. He was not Jewish, but they said that was not right. Because everyone, the Torah says you should not disgrace anybody, and it's considered disgrace to burn anybody, any human, he argues. Mukach da mitzvah lifnei moso, and he says, and actually you can get from here, da mitzvah lifnei moso, she is sorry if oso hareze tzavash yefshar lekaima. And if someone therefore says, please burn me, cremate me, you cannot fulfill it. As he goes on the next piece, v'afilo ha mitzvah lifnei moso, v'amar altik v'reini, kaimlan trichin likvor oso, you cannot listen. By the way, this becomes a very common issue. Speaking about chaplains, a very common issue we deal with, which is what happens when someone dies and then the family finds later, oh wait, look, they have a will. Or look, they already made arrangements to be cremated. And the family is now in shock. What do we do? David C. Hoffman just said here, you cannot follow their wishes. You have to cremate them anyways. I'm sorry, I said the opposite. You have to bury them anyways. You cannot follow their wishes to be cremated. You have to bury them anyways. It's not always so simple, though, because what about the circumstance, which is what we face a lot in the hospital, which is like the story I told you before, where some of the family is on board with it and some of the family is not on board with it, right? Or the family was already aware, or the family is now mixed. The family finds out, oh, our loved one wanted to be cremated. Half the family says, you know what? It's basic integrity. We have to follow their wishes. Other side of the family says, no, how can we violate the Torah? We cannot follow their wishes. So this becomes a huge dilemma we deal with in the hospital a lot. And I'll come back to it. I'm just bringing it up now. I'll conclude with trying to bring these up. And please remind me if I don't. He goes on, by the way, I'm not going to go into it now, but in this piece, Gimel, this paragraph, Gimel, Rav Zalat Tzvi Hoffman, to deal with that issue of Shaul being burned, and also with that Rashba that we quoted before, that allows lime in the casket. And he says, in both these cases, that's because they had to, for outstanding circumstances, but they only declayed the flesh. They buried the bones. Whereas in cremation, it's cremating even the bones. So it's much worse. And then he goes on, another reason, he says, what about burying the ashes? So he says, here in paragraph 4, De'ein mitzvas kvura ela'im yesh kan rosho verubo. You're only required to bury if you have the head and the majority of the body. Pshita de'ein chiyuv kvura ba'afar. There's no obligation to bury with ashes. And this is important. I just want you to see this now because I'm going to come back to this. V'filu yesh kan afar shel kol aguf. Even if you had the ashes of the whole body, including the head and the majority, lo miboy ima afar enum mitame. And not just the fact that the ashes do not make a kohen become impurified, and therefore you don't have to worry about burying it to protect the kohen. V'im kain ein lo din mace. But this is not considered a corpse. U'bevadai ein kan chiyuv kvura. There's no obligation to bury. Ela fil im timse lomer da afar mitame. Even if you would say that the ashes have some kind of status, mikol makom hare ein kan rosh rubo ela geshem ksas mikol aguf alze lo amru haTorah kvor tikvarenu. When you just have these pieces of body left, there is no requirement to bury. So you see from here a very strong opposition to cremation. There's no requirement for burial, and he's totally opposed, and that seems to be it, and that's it. We're done. Do not engage in cremation. Stay away from it. But then something fascinating happens, because remember, Rabbi David Zvi Hoffman was the rabbi of the community. He was not just a scholar giving his opinion. He had to be able to set public policy. And it's complicated when you have lots of different people choosing lots of different things, and you have a role, even in the government, so to speak, where you have official, formal Jewish cemeteries that are part of the national structure and the Kahal system. It's very complicated. So look what happens here. This is mind-boggling. I mean, he just came out so strongly against burial of ashes and cremation, and then look at what he does at the end of the response. In the previous response, there's a few. In the previous, he just left it at that. No burial by Jewish law of cremated ashes and no cremation whatsoever. Then all of a sudden, he changes in the same letter, in the same response, and he writes here, Vihine, Hagam shekasafti la'el demishum migdar milsa tov le'takein, even though I said above, that because we have to avoid, you know, this issue and prevent it, therefore mishum migdar milsa tov le'takein shelo yikvor ha'ofer b'beis ha'kvaros, you cannot bury the ashes in the cemetery, Ke'es hadrana be mikoach mayim rechazal. I have now changed my mind. Now, he didn't change his mind that's prohibited. He didn't change his mind that it's the wrong thing to do. He didn't change his mind that he's opposed to it. But he changed his mind about strategically what to do with the ashes. There's a mechilta, a rabbinic saying, it says as follows, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai Amar, al tivahel listor bamot goyim. Don't be quick. You don't have to be quick to destroy the bamos goyim. Shlo tivne biyadcha shlo tistor shel lavenim v'yomer lecha asam shel avanim. You don't have to be scared of destroying something that was built, because sometimes you have to rebuild something greater than that was which was destroyed. What does that mean? He explains here. Now this is sort of political strategic thinking. What does that mean? Mikan mukach. From here we see. She'ein lasos tekana b'makom she'yesh lachush al-yidei zeh nihye muchrachim lekalkel yoser mima shetiknenu. You do not make a rule when that rule is going to cause a worse outcome than what you did by making this rule. We want to prevent cremation. But if we totally forbid burial of the ashes, is that going to prevent the cremation, or is that going to cause something worse? Maybe this is not a good idea. Vahashta. Now, im nino beta kavaros bifnei ha'afar, if we close the gates of the cemeteries from these ashes, yesh lachu shenie muchrachin levatel tekanazu, we might have to uproot even that prohibition of burying the ashes, of our prohibition. Ve'az ye hechrach likvor ha'afar bein mesim acherim bli hevdel klal. We're going to have to just mix the ashes in completely. They're going to have to be buried like everyone else if we totally forbid them, because we might not be able to get away with such a strict prohibition. Asher al kain, therefore, tov laniach hadavar kishura sadin. We should therefore do what I believe is the shura sadin. Instead of having to bury a rush l'etzel tzadik, we should just do the following. Rak. Yiksu makom miyuchad l'kvuras ofer. He has a brilliant, interesting idea. He says, you have to separate a special area for the ashes. Makom miyuchad l'kvuras ofer mesim kedei lahavdil ben kvuras mitzvah gemura. Because the idea is you separate between what's totally obligated to be buried and what's not really obligated, what we approve of and what we're less approving of, and make a separate section in the Jewish cemeteries for the ashes. Uben kavura she'ena mitzvah gemura, because that's not total mitzvah gemura. Or, and he has a brilliant distinction here, ben kavura sakahal, or you can have one section that's the communal burial area, lekavuras yechidim, and another section that's the private burial area, where people can do whatever they want in those areas. That the community will not be obligated in that. Because the idea is, and this distinction that distinguishing between family and community, that both, if you have both, you include those who you want to include in their own place they want to be included, but you also show that there's an act that has separated them from the Jewish community, and therefore you say in the communal area we can keep certain standards. You don't have to be worried about who you're going to be buried next to there. But if you want to be buried in the private area, you can do whatever you want there. But the community has certain standards. And therefore everyone will know the difference. Everyone will therefore know that cremation is a serious prohibition. And this is opposed to Ladas Moshe v'Yisrael. And this is opposed to the ways of the Torah. So he has this fascinating idea of distinguishing between the two areas and, yes, burying the cremains, but in a separate area. He then concludes, in his, because also the rabbis are reading this, and he says, rabbis, you're reading this? He says, Beves ha, look at this word. This is a word he's writing, he's German, right? But this is English also. Beves ha crematorium. Lo yishamesh ish mishubude ha'kal shelo yisayo la'ovri avera. No one that's mishubad to the call should be involved at the crematory in any way. Shelo yisayo la'ovri avera ela hayorshim yasu ha'kal. The rabbis, the communal functionaries, they cannot be involved with calling the cemetery, the crematoria, arranging the pickup, doing anything. The family will have to do that themselves. Hayorshim yasu ha'kal kiritzonam va'kal lo ye lo chelek ba'oso maisa. But the community, the formal community, cannot be involved with arranging for the cremation. Also, the muval offered levesek varos, and if the ashes arrive at the Jewish cemetery, lemokom yuchad lo, for that the specific place for them, lo yaspid arav. He actually says the rabbi is not allowed to give a eulogy. Esa nedar v'yasimu oso ba'aron kashar meisim. They should be put in a casket like everyone else. V'yikvru oso ba'aron and v'achazen yomer tzadik. And then the chazen could say tzidduk hadin. Imam Alavim, Va'avelim, and with the mourners, and they'll say Kaddish. The Chevra Kaddisha, but the formal Chevra Kaddisha of the community, the burial society, lo yis asku bechabura oficialal. They cannot officially, be'ofen reshami, they cannot be involved. The Chevra Kaddisha will have to be a private group. It can't be the official Chevra Kaddisha. Be'osu gvur, v'rak hakarvanim hamishubadim ve'osim beschar. Only the workers that work at the cemetery, they can be the ones to bury the body. And v'rishus nesuna be'ad kol yachid nesayeh sham kefiah inyu kefiah torah hasha ul'inyu avelus im yishalu hakarovim yifseku lehem sha'avelus chalu achar hakavura. And if they want to mourn, the mourning will begin after the burial. Some of the rabbis at that time were saying, no mourning. No mourning is allowed. You cannot mourn for them. You cannot sit shiva for them. You cannot say kaddish for them. Rav W.C. Hoffman was saying, after the burial, then you could start sitting shiva. Actually, the Gesher Chaim, actually Rosh Hashechta told me this as well, that we actually encourage people to start the burial, start the avelus, the mourning, after the body is given over to the crematory, to the cremation place. They don't have to wait until it's actually cremated. And Rabbi Zohn told me that the reason is because if we're not going to be involved with it at all, we're not part of the burial, we're separate from it then, so we can begin mourning then because we're not involved with the next step. Unless, he said, we're waiting for family to arrive and we want to sit shiva all together. Then it would be allowed. But Rav Dovzi Hoffman comes off pretty strong here that it was prohibited. We're not sure exactly what the cremation rate was at that time. It certainly was not as high as it is now because it's increasing rapidly, but we know it was happening. And by the way, Rav Weinberg in the Sri Aish gives a little bit more color to his response here. And Rav Weinberg writes, in his response, he just gives a little bit of the reasoning here. He says, you know, why is this so bad? He says, "Hanisrafim heim bechal anashim sheparku ol hamitzos." They are considered to be that they have uprooted the mitzvos. They are no longer feeling bound by Torah. She'asher la'asok b'kvurasim. That's why you cannot be involved with their burial. V'asher mechal Shabbos. Even though those who do not observe Jewish law, like violate Shabbos, v'shar of our yonim, no gulhaka, we do bury them and we do give them all honors. Why is that? Mishum she'yesh lomar shema asu tshuva kodom misasam. Maybe they repented before they died. They regretted that they didn't observe Shabbos or whatever it was. Masha ein kei b'mitzuvim lisrof gufam. But if someone commands to have their body buried l'achar mosam, harei sofa mochiach shlo asu tshuva kodem misasam. It's clear that they did not do tshuva. They did not repent before they died, and therefore we have no way to justify assuming that they repented somehow. Which is a fascinating reasoning that comes up there. And this came up also in the suicide discussion with the Chacham Sofer as well. He also goes on and says, Yesh b'zeh mishum misayeh l'idei ovri avera. Also, to bury them would be like assisting with the sin, so to speak. Shari b'zeh she'anu kovri masam. If we bury them, it's ke'ilu anu maskimim leheter hasrefa. It's as if we are agreeing to that. And then he says something also very fascinating. And he says, Yesh b'zeh mishum chil Hashem. It's also considered a desecration of God's name. Why? Miachar shebali da'atot acherot ena mit Taplim klal begufei nisrafim. Since the other religions don't allow burial of the ashes. Lefisha roim bezeh hachashas emunas hasharas hanefesh. Since they see that as undermining the longevity of the soul, v'manachnu etapo behem yesh bezeh mishum chilal shem. We're saying that we are less concerned with the remaining of the soul than other religions. That would be considered to be a desecration of God's name, that we are more lenient, that we also don't see how important it is. And he says, you know, you could bury to avoid the Hana, which means the benefit from the body, so you could allow burial for some reasons, but it's not really required. And he concludes, Hine kol atamim shenemru gabe kruah sa'afer shaychem gabe asiyas tahara. You can't even, you shouldn't be allowed to do a tahara, the ritual washing, because that shows that you're showing some kind of respect to the body and you're included and involved with the process. Hine she'asur la'asok b'kvurasim, you can't do anything that's related to their burial. He even says, you should be more strict when it comes to the tahara, because shari inyan tahara hu lechazek es emuna b'techiyas hameisim. It's supposed to strengthen the belief in resurrection of the dead, and it seems to be, as the Achiezer writes here, that the ikkar reason, why cremation is forbidden, he says, is bezeh avos olam emi shekover es meiso ma'amin b'techiyas hameisim. Burial of the dead expresses belief in resurrection. That's considered to be as if one is not believing in resurrection of the dead, and so therefore they were considered to be allowing it. And yes, there were rabbis, some rabbis in Italy who allowed cremation. This is part of what they were responding to, were those rabbis who permitted cremation. So now we come to the next step in the story. So that was the German side. Don't worry. Please hold comments for a minute, because I'm taking you on a journey, and it's important to see where we go with this, because the journey continues. That was just step one. Step one was the initial reaction. The rabbis were very strongly opposed. Step two now moves to Israel and to the Israeli chief rabbinate. And that was in three stages. That's going to be in the 30s, the 40s, and the 90s. Let's start with the 30s. This started coming to Israel, right? It was in Palestine then, right? It starts, you know, in around 1900 in Europe. And then the rabbis, what happened was, in 1931, the editor of the Jewish Chronicle, his name was Leopold Jacob Greenberg, an English-British Zionist, was cremated in London. But then he made arrangements for his ashes to be buried on Mount Scopus. Actually went to college there in Har Tzofim, and then be moved to Har Zeitim on Mount Olives, right next to Eliezer ben Yehuda's grave. But this was fought vigorously, and then it took 7 months of battle that his cremains were in limbo for 7 months, and they were finally buried in a secular kibbutz in Degania. And the chief rabbis issued a very strong statement, which I'll show you in just a moment, forbidding any cremation of any Hever Kedisha even being involved with cremated ashes in Israel at that time. And this shows how the chief rabbinate, and this is how Professor Furziger delineated this, that it shows how the chief rabbinate's role at that time was as a defender of tradition. And they need to work with the entire spectrum of the state. And, you know, and this shows the really strong opposition, which is fascinating, because, you know, there was another case, and I'll show you both of them just briefly, that a crematoria was built in Cape Town in South Africa. And they turned to the chief rabbi there for a ruling, and that chief rabbi turned to Rav Kook, the Israeli chief rabbi, and said, okay, what do we do? What do we do about this? And I'll show you Rav Kook just as intro. Rav Kook is known, he was known for being someone who was a very broad-minded, very inclusive thinker, someone who embraced the secular Zionists and people who are otherwise considered to be heretical. He included them and embraced them and found merit in their actions. And look if you think that this is the approach he takes in his cremation response. And when he responds to the cremation issue, he writes as follows. I'm just going to read you some select pieces to get a taste for his reaction. He says, "V'hine, davar pashut hu, it's simple. She'ikar minhag mechudash zeh, this new custom, novea mimakor mushchas me'anashim shirotzim lahamir das v'torah. This is a horrible thing for people who want to uproot the Torah. V'afilo im ha'kavura ha'isa noheges be'Yisrael rak betur minhag ba'alma. Even if we would just say burial is not a commandment in the Torah, it's just a custom. It's our ancient custom. Be strict with the customs of your ancestors. We have to uphold the customs. And so even if it's not a commandment in the Torah, we still have to be very strict about it. he writes, he's so strong about this. He writes at one point, he says, I'll go down a little bit. I just want to show you some tastes here. He says, Elisha, Perishu, Rock position imishu. There's a debate. Let me just back up for a second and explain something. There's a debate in the Talmud. Is the requirement for burial in the Talmud because of bizayon or kapara? Which means, is it because we don't want the body to be disgraced by being left out? Or is it because of the belief that being buried in the ground somehow gives some kind of forgiveness and atonement to the body? So the rabbis in the Talmud don't conclude. They don't conclude their answer with that. So we usually assume it's both. When it comes to a hesped, a eulogy, that's for the kavod hames. That's for the honor of the deceased. And therefore the deceased can say, in fact, I was at a funeral last week that this was the case. The deceased can say, I don't want any eulogies. I don't want it. And it's my honor. Don't eulogize me. And therefore we don't eulogize them. But if the deceased says, don't bury me, since we believe that the aspect of burial that's to prevent bizayon is for all humanity, prevent disgrace of all humanity, they might not have the option to do that. So that's what he says. He says, shehefreshu, right there in the middle paragraph, bezeh, she'im mishum bizayona asher lishmo lo. If it's because of bizayon, we can't listen to them. V'chayv nekover, we have to bury them. V'im mishum kapara, and even if it's because of atonement, they can't say, I don't want atonement. Harehu mashchis es nafsho, because they're destroying their soul. Shemevatlim imenu es segulas koach hakapara. They're destroying from themselves the opportunity for atonement. V'al kein lo toa lo kapara zu. And therefore, this will not give them any kapara. B'vadai ein lacha iser gadol mizeh. There's no bigger prohibition than this. Sheyavod adam es nafsho v'lo yechpots b'kapara so. And that they don't care about their ultimate burial. This is considered to be an ultimate grave offense, no pun intended, and they cannot do so. And he goes on just to give you a couple last little tastes of what he says before I start to summarize. He says, in this case, it's a kal v'chomer b'din nedan shekapeda gadola yesh b'Yisrael shteya kavura davka nasis b'meisim. We are very strict. We've always been very strict about this. Shechayv lim noah b'chol is. We have to do everything we can to not do this. Ella sheulai roi likvor esa offer. He says maybe you can bury the ashes so that you don't benefit from it. But the main thing is, ein l'chol kashu b'Yisrael esek im kavuras hanisrafim. We should not have anything to do with them. Shepirshu midarcha tzibur. They've left the Jewish community by doing that, and they've got all kinds of horrible things they're doing, and chalila lishtatef b'shum derech, we cannot be involved in any way. And in fact, they published official macha, an official rabbinic proclamation and protest. Macha means a protest that was signed by him. It was signed, we see below, by Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank and a number of other rabbis, and they wrote as follows. This was the national, this went out to all Jewish communities around the world as follows in the 1930s. Anachnu harabanim chatum mata, us, the great rabbis who signed below, well, they didn't say they're great, but these great rabbis who signed below, matzanu latzmenu chova kadosha, we found it a holy obligation, limchos, to oppose, to protest, neged apirtza shal mischachim harotim la'akor gevulos olam, that these people that want to uproot the boundaries of Judaism that we've had for ages and generations, uleches bederech haminus, and to go in this way of heresy, levatal mitzvos kvuras amesim, ulasos kemekukalim shebeumos olam, to do these horrible things that have been done now in the world, lisrof es amesim, v'inenu modim lechol achinu b'nei Yisrael. We are now telling all Jews around the world, shekol chever kdisha, that all burial societies, asur liasasik be'ofer hasrufim, you are forbidden from being involved with the ashes. V'asur lekabel asa afar likvoros, and you can't even receive the ashes to bury them. The kivrei Yisrael v'lo lasos shum seder shel kavod amesim be'afar asrufim yanal. You cannot be involved in any part of the burial. This is very strong language, and here as Chief Rabbi Rav Cook was in his role as defender of religion. That's what he's doing here, right? He's defending religion. We did see in one specific case, there was a case where a rabbi in Hadera asked him, and he did say the similar response that Rav Hoffman gave. He said, you know what? You could put the ashes privately, quietly, put them in their own separate section outside of the cemetery. That was the first response. So now you see that the initial reaction of the rabbis, both in Germany and in Israel, the initial reaction was very, very strong opposition. If I ended there, I mean, I guess you would just say, like, okay, that's it. This was, the rabbis are harsh against it, and it's strongly prohibited, and nobody should do this. That seems to be the response. But let's keep following the history. Let's keep going. So that first stage in the Rabbanut, no public crematorium allowed to bury all cremains. There were only some private kibbutzim that did this. The official position of the Rabbanut was stricter even than Europe in some ways, because they said you can't do anything with the cremains, only under very specific circumstances. But really the main argument was you can never do anything with the ashes, officially, formally, and except for maybe some specific situations, but that was not part of the official policy. But then something changed. Two things changed. First thing that changes, and it's probably obvious, and we've referenced it already a number of times, and that was the Holocaust. The Holocaust happens, and many, many, many Jews, many millions of Jews, were cremated. So now all these Jews are being cremated. What happened was, in 1946, there was a funeral in Tel Aviv, and a large crowd gathered at the Great Synagogue there on Allenby Street. And for the ashes of thousands of Jews who were murdered in the Chełmno death camp in Poland. And they were going to have this burial. And this happened, and it happened. And then it happened many of times in the 1950s. In fact, cremains, the cremated ashes, which used to be symbols of heresy, these were now being buried as acts of religious loyalty. And so what happened was Rav Yitzchak Herzog, the Ashkenazi chief rabbi, and Rav Yitzchak Nissim, the Sephardic chief rabbi, issued a joint statement that permitted their burial and emphasized, the importance of doing so. So now you see, it was totally different circumstances, but the same result, right? That they're both ashes. So if they don't have any status as a body, why should this help? But they were treated very differently. The chief rabbis said, this is a Haras Shah, an extreme moment. They were victims. No one should learn or make any inferences from them. And some argue that, the voluntary cremation forfeits world to come. There was no need for the burial rites. But the martyrs, on the other hand, were righteous. And therefore, they merit full redemption. And thus, they do require burial, which atones for sins and prepares one for the world to come. So ironically, what's wild is that the state of Israel has become the location of more burial of cremated ashes, of cremated Jewish ashes in the world than any other place. Right, the state of Israel has a lot of cremated remains, and as hard as the rabbis came down on it at first, the rabbis then allowed it because of what was going on. As an example, the Ritzvi Pesach Frank, who signed that prohibition, he signed the prohibition, and then he himself says, nearly pasher bar de vade ika mitzvah chiyuv bakach. It's now all of a sudden a mitzvah to bury the ashes. Aval tzrichim shaper kavura mikametam. There's many reasons why. Reishis mipazu shasurim bahana. Because, the ashes are forbidden to benefit from. So now all of a sudden, you see a very, very different perspective here. He says, efshar hasrufim akadoshim tzrichim kavura bishvil haetzim shlo nisrof. Maybe there's some bone in there that didn't get burnt up. Right? Maybe there's some bone. If there's some bone in the ashes that didn't get burned, then there's a reason to do so. And so this is for their honor. So he allowed it. That was step number two, as I mentioned. So all of a sudden, the Holocaust complicates things. Then things get even more complicated, because then you move to the 1990s. What happened in the 90s? The Russian Revolution. The Russian Revolution is another thing. This is Professor Furziger points out that, in Russia, in the former Soviet Union, cremation was encouraged. It was very, very common. And many Jews did so. And so then when they made Aliyah to Israel, they wanted to bring the ashes with them to inter them in Jewish cemeteries. So Rav Gorin was chief rabbi at that time. And he also took a very hard line approach prohibiting burial of cremains, although he also lauded the burial of Holocaust ashes. But when it came to the Russians, he was very lenient. He allowed burial of the ashes in specifically designated areas, like in Har HaMenuchos, there's a whole section, there's a whole Russian ashes section, literally, because they didn't do so out of heretical motives, but out of ignorance. This is the key point. Once it became clear that people who had no religious upbringing whatsoever, no religious education, no options really, it was ignorance. So for example, he permitted burial of ashes for a person who asked to be cremated to facilitate burial in Israel. In other words, what happened was they were buried in Russia. But then the question was, can they exhume their ashes? Can they exhume the body? But the only way they'll be allowed to transport them will be by cremating them. And he allowed it. He allowed it in that case. Rav Mordechai Eliyahu wrote a letter, in fact, comparing the permission to bury Nazi ashes to the fact that those cremated simply out of option for burial altogether, out of no option for burial. This is what happened as a form of coercion. And he said it's a mitzvah to bury them. similar to the German rabbi's precedent, right? And some chevrodishas in Israel then began expanding this ruling to those who are cremated out of complete lack of knowledge. And if that's what everyone in their surroundings did, they're also considered anusim, or tinuk shenishpa. They didn't know better. They could be buried. And so it's fascinating how the situation of the rabbinate changed when secular Zionists were no longer dominating Israeli life, and the religious community didn't have to fear for its survival. So now the rabbinate didn't have to be as vigilant protecting religious norms, right? So what was happening now is they had to face a challenge of Israel absorbing millions of Jews from the former Soviet Union, and now all of a sudden you have a different role the rabbinate is trying to play. By the way, he did say you cannot. They didn't want to have any burial of ashes from cremations that took place in Israel. And so until 2004, there was no option. There was this place called Ale Shalechet that opened in Moshav Chibat Zion, and they were actually some survivors of the Holocaust who wanted to identify with their family members were actually choosing cremation and going there. But people were, ironically, burning that place down. And it wasn't officially allowed, but the Israeli government won't give it funds. But it exists. It's possible. But the interesting thing that the chief rabbinate issued a decree, just like Rav Cook's, that no Chevra Kedisha should be involved with this. But what's fascinating is that one-time exceptions when Israel did cremate someone, by the way, there was one person when the state of Israel actually cremated someone. I don't know if you're aware of this, but speaking of the Holocaust, it was Adolf Eichmann, who requested to be cremated after his execution in 1962, and that was done. And I think that was done with probably some pleasure. But interestingly, the rabbinu progressed from no burial to a separate section to honorable burial for Holocaust victims. And what's fascinating, and I'm just going to start wrapping up now and giving some reflections as a chaplain, I'll just show you just a fascinating example this that came up, just because it's relevant for discussion and for the Holocaust example, which was that Rav Moshe was asked the question. First of all, Rav Moshe Feinstein was very strongly, adamantly opposed to burial of cremation ashes. Right? He says, "Elu shesorfim osam bein mitzad rishas abanim bein mitzad rishas atzmo shesivah shorfoso ein laniach likvura afer bekvuras Yisrael bechlal afer shel mesim ein tarich likvura." No, he's totally against burial of cremated ashes. He says it's forbidden. But then he received the following question. He was asked that someone needed to take exhume, just like I mentioned before, exhume their body from Russia to then bury them in the United States where their family lived, and they had to cremate them in order to do so. So when they asked Rav Moshe Feinstein about this, he did say, "Behadu ulai tov likvor afar meis likvodo af she'ein bo chiyuv kvorot." Okay, fine. If you're going to do this, it might be better to actually bury the ashes. V'imhu aviv ulai yesh bo chiyuv kiburav. Maybe you, now that you've done this, you have to do it out of kiburav. Now, if he was asking him, is it better to cremate them, to move them, or just leave them in Russia? In that case, he says no. Truth is, you don't really have to bury them, and the truth is, you should not cremate them in order to do so. But if you're doing so, if this is already happening, it might be fulfilling a mitzvah of honoring your parents to be involved with the burial of the ashes, if that's what they requested, and maybe you should do so. If you're asking me, he says it here. Just read this last line. Of al mistaber shekvura hu adifa. Burial is better, even in Russia in a non-Jewish cemetery, surrounded by, they're not in a Jewish cemetery. It's still better to remain there buried. Mimashi she nikvar etel akum. That's fine. Deha kvura hu kapara. The burial is atoning them. Shezet ika gam kshe nikvar etel Russia etel akum. Umashi nikvar etel Russia akum eno mirga kapara. So bezet, it still atones, and therefore they shouldn't move the body if they had a choice. But if they've done so already, Rav Moshe did allow the burial of the ashes and says maybe it's not just allowed, it's a proper thing to do. By the way, in the Holocaust, Rav Oshri, in the shoot in his Chazon Tshuvos Mimamakim, he was also asked if they had a choice to cremate someone or bury them in a cemetery, in a Christian cemetery where they have crosses above them. He said it's still better to be buried in that cemetery than to be cremated, which was quite a profound ruling. So just very strong. So anyways, this just gives you a feel. I just wanted to show you this this kind of progression because it's fascinating, and it shows you the struggles with applying Jewish law, with legislating Jewish law, and with how things are different based on the context. When something is being done as an active rebellion against religious authority and religious beliefs and fundamental ideology and religion, it's met very strong opposition. You can understand why. when something is being done because one's being forced and it's an act of murder, obviously you then just have compassion. And then when it's an act of ignorance, it also is very different. So nowadays, like I've discussed this with, for example, Rav Hershel Schechter, with Rav Asher Weiss, and they say, you know what, now the prohibitions against doing a tahara, doing tachrichin, all these things prior to the bear, for the chevredisha to be involved. Most chevredisha, to be honest, in my experience, will not be involved with the bear, with the cremains, with the burial ashes. But technically speaking, it doesn't have the same prohibition today. We still want to maintain, you know, the standards. But technically speaking, they do not actually prohibit it because they say, you know, it wasn't done out of an act of heresy anymore. They weren't doing it out of denial of the belief in resurrection, and therefore it's allowed. And so just now, it's allowed to bury the remains and be involved with it. So just now to conclude, I brought up a bunch of hypotheticals, and now let me close with them. So first of all, just to summarize, burial, we believe, is a time-honored Jewish tradition. It's mentioned throughout the Torah. Even God observed it by burying Moses. It's an ancient tradition. We believe in respect to the body, right? The human is created in the image of God and the divine image, and we want to treat it that way. I know that sometimes people share with me that they are afraid of being buried alive, and that's why they choose cremation. Of course, being cremated alive is much worse. Sometimes people share the desire to show connection with their loved ones who were cremated in the Holocaust, and they want to identify with them. People have shared with me about tattoos, the same, that helps them to feel a sense of identity. I just sometimes wonder if, you know, people who were done to against their will, if they would be horrified to know that their descendants did this as a sense of identifying with them. But also this is an act of, you know, our sense and our belief in resurrection. Of course, that we believe God will resurrect the ashes from the Holocaust. Also, just you know, the belief in human being created in the image of God. Also, you know, as a chaplain, I've noticed that a burial plot is oftentimes the only reminder that a person lived. It shows their impact in the world. There was a time when, you know, the worst criminals had their ashes spread at sea as a way of saying they're too evil to be remembered. And so why choose this? In fact, many funeral homes have a problem with tons of ashes that are not claimed because once, you know, people cremate, they instinctively sort of realize that there's no importance left to them and like a body. And it's oftentimes they're left at these places, and there's been actually many scandals with cremation remains often being, you know, bodies being misused for research and things like that, or dumping the ashes. And often, you know, sometimes people don't care about visiting graves as much, but some do. And I often have found that when people have a place to visit, it can be very cathartic to have that place to go to. And, you know, if you choose cremation, that can't be undone. And unfortunately, I've witnessed a lot of family strife over fighting over this, choosing cremation, and then regretting it, which, you know, that's too late. You can't put the body, I mean, God will one day put the body back together, but we don't have the technology yet. And so this sometimes gives a connection to the next generation, and there's a sense of closure oftentimes that burial brings, and it sometimes symbolizes returning to the earth, and in a way that can't be done. And so, you know, to conclude, as a chaplain, what I do, and I apologize, I went over time, hopefully that's okay, so hopefully you'll give me kapara for that. I'll just conclude now with, because I opened with some stories, let me just conclude what we do in those cases. And by the way, many people often claim that cremation is environmentally friendly, and that's why they choose it. I actually looked into it, and I found that cremated bodies emit toxins into the environment much more, especially mercury, than it makes a major carbon footprint. But anyways, thanks. So to finish these stories now, so what do? The family is telling me, you know, we just found out that our loved one wants to be cremated, and we are uncomfortable with that. Or we're fighting over this. They want it, we don't. How do we handle this, especially as a chaplain? And I consulted with a number of great rabbis on this because I struggled with this a lot when I first became a chaplain. Now, unfortunately, it's become common, but it's so sad. It's, by the way, a major reason why a person should state their wishes early and while they're healthy and do things like nativot through Eimatai, where they can fill out an advance directive and be very clear about what they want. But when we don't make these decisions ahead of time, it leads to a lot of family strife. So what did I tell this young man who said to me, you know, great rabbi, you're on my side. Convince my mom that she's wrong. Convince my sister that they're wrong. Tell them that they're going to hell. You know, I spoke to this woman and she was very clear-minded. She had made up her mind. You know, sometimes people tell me things like, I hate my body. I've suffered so much. I hate my body. And look, as a chaplain, my role is simply to say, tell me more about that. You know, I'm so sorry to hear that. If they can, through processing, make a better decision, how great. If they say to me something like, you know, Rabbi, it's cheaper. It's just cheaper. And I don't want the costs. You know, we have a program here, and I think they're around the world, where we will handle burial for free, traditional burial. And so oftentimes, this is why, by the way, oftentimes I'm involved with cases. Let's say someone is at the end of life doing something that's not allowed by Jewish law. Rav Asher Weiss told me, you should be there, even though they're not following Jewish law, because maybe they're going to ask a question and you can guide them in a way that's helpful in that way. What if they say to me, we're not following Jewish law in these ways, but when it comes to cremation, Rabbi, we're willing to listen to you. Is it allowed by Jewish law? You know, we want to do it because it's cheaper. So I can say, well, you know, I'm not here to force you. I'm not as a rabbi, as a chaplain. I'm here to support you, be there for you as you need, Be'asher Husham, as you need. I'm not here to coerce or push religion on you in any way. If your concern is about money, there are ways we can help you take care of it. There's funds and organizations we can take care of that. So when this woman told me, Rabbi, I've made up my mind. This is what I'm doing. I'm an adult of sound mind and body. And this is what I'm doing. And no matter what my son says, I'm not doing something else. So I consulted with some rabbis. I went back to that son and I said, look, you have two choices. One choice is to fight like crazy and sever all bonds with your family and become estranged from them, because they're going to do it anyways. Your other choice is to say to them, look, you know that I'm opposed to this. I'm not going to be the one to make the phone call, and I can't have any funeral at the crematory, whatever. I can't be involved with this at all. But I love you, and so I'm here for you. I'm going to remain connected. And just know that when it comes to the cremation, I'm not taking part in that. You do what you do, and just know that I'm not supporting it in a direct way, but I'm still your son. I still love you. I'm your brother. And maintain, because you're only going to cause harm. You're not going to actually accomplish. So there are some times, this is in extreme cases, but it has happened. There are some times when we've had cases where the family finds out afterwards, oh, look, they've already paid for cremation. They've chosen cremation. But we're horrified. We are now so upset. We're so distraught. All the children are united in being opposed to it. Sometimes we say to them, you know what? If the whole family is opposed and so upset, maybe we can assume that if they would have known how much pain and distress they are putting you through, they would not have chosen this. And therefore, if everyone's united, we can go against the family, the patient's wishes, and still opt for burial. But that's only if everyone's united and they're very upset and they hadn't mentioned it before. Otherwise, there's a certain integrity involved. But the challenge is, you know, this issue, I often find that end of life and beginning of life are so similar, right? The beginning of life, just like you're dependent on others and you often can't control all your bodily functions. And there's so many things. I'm not going to go into it now. But this is one of them. I remember I had a woman once call me and say that, could I convince her children to circumcise their baby when they have a son because they weren't planning on it. I tried to no avail. She told me, I don't know if I can wish them Mazel Tov. I said to her, you know, wish them Mazel Tov. Then the baby was born, no circumcision. Remember, she called me, she said, I can't even change the diaper. She was so upset. I think in some ways cremation is like this for many Jews, where it's like a gut reaction, just like, this is just not what we do. Even if we can't describe it, it's sometimes one of these things that we just are so opposed to. By the way, sometimes there's a compromise. So one compromise that I've also been guided by some great rabbis on this, and I actually wrote about this, which is that if they absolutely will not opt for burial, but they're choosing cremation, sometimes as a compromise, a mausoleum, if they will opt for a mausoleum and they're willing to do a mausoleum for whatever reason, let's say they're scared of the burial underground, and then we could put some dirt and, you know, onto the mausoleum, rabbis will argue, even though a mausoleum is not technically fulfill all these obligations to Kavor Tikvarena in the burial on the ground, mausoleum is better than cremation. So that sometimes could be. But the point is, we try our best to develop some kind of sense of cohesion and end-of-life decisions, recognizing that, you know, cremation is very permanent, but we try to have some kind of unity here. And I have noticed that there's a cathartic nature of having a physical place to visit and a reassurance that there's this place to visit and that therefore one can be remembered. But I hope this just shows that an example of how, you know, these end-of-life decision-making are very complicated. We do have guidance from the Torah and from the rabbis, but a lot of it is situationally dependent. And it matters what the situation is, what the motivations are, and we have to act very carefully on a case-by-case basis. But hopefully it's reassuring and helpful to know what the general gist of the requirements and the desires of the Torah are, and that can guide us through these decisions to be able to move forward. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Rabbi Weiner. There is one really interesting question here that was brought up by one of the members who said that they feel that with the Chevra Kedisha, there's like a little bit of a difference between the roles of the Chevra Kedisha and the rabbis or the community rabbis. The Chevra Kedisha does taharas. If a person wants tahara, they should do that. And it's not their role to sort of make a statement about whether they should do a tahara before a cremation or not. Uh-huh. Because, you know, they feel like the role of the rabbis to do that, and the Chevra Kedisha sort of separate out from that. That's a complicated dynamic, but I'm wondering what you think about it's who has the responsibility here in order, right, when you have these
guys. Yeah, it's an excellent question. Great point. A lot of it's situational. You know, when the Chevra Kedisha is an official communal body, like in Germany, where it's the communal Chevra Kedisha. It's funded by the community. It's that community. So they were really official, right? What we often do here, you know, what I do personally, what I've been guided in, my understanding of these sources is we'll say, you know what, as a rabbi, I cannot officiate a cremation. That is giving too much of a stamp, of a Jewish stamp of approval. However, let's say they do the cremation, that happens or something, and then they want to have some kind of an event for like the shloshim, 30 days later, some kind of an askara, a memorial event, not at the crematory, right, at the person's house or their synagogue. We say, you know what, that it's the rabbi today, I feel, shows like a religious stamp of approval. So how do you show the Chevra Kedishas, by the way, they're pretty strict about this, most of them. They'll say, you know what, we have to maintain our standards because, by the way, there's a whole other issue, which I didn't really mention, which was that in many of the cemeteries, they have bylaws. And when someone is buried, some of the bylaws include, we will not bury someone in this cemetery who is, you know, violates the Sabbath or who's cremated, because there's a belief that there's an influence on those who are nearby who are buried as well. So the cemetery sometimes have official bylaws where they say, we can't bury you here because it's an offense to those who were buried previously and we have to maintain their dignity. By the way, that helps when you have a separate burial section. I know of a cemetery, by the way, in the Midwest where they did have a separate section for people who died by suicide. And then over the years, the cemetery kept on expanding, and now those people are right in the center of the cemetery. So that's also another issue. But it's fascinating. By the way, it brings up someone else's private message to me that there's the whole issue of, it's really a Bubba Mises, the whole issue of tattoos. You know, people think you can't be buried in a Jewish cemetery if you have tattoos. But that's not true. There is no such prohibition. But there have been prohibitions about burying certain people in cemeteries, as we've now seen, but that's not one of them. So it's just a fascinating discussion.
Yeah, I mean, it raises a larger issue, which you touched upon a lot of different ways, which is, in 2023, what's the best public policy?
Right.
In order to deal with this balance. And, you know, end of life is a very sensitive time. It also is a time when you can bring family members closer to religion in some ways. And so you're trying to balance, I think, a little bit here about how to keep people connected while dealing with this modern phenomenon, which is really spreading throughout the Jewish community.
Right, right. And it's a fascinating example. That's why I love that David C. Hoffman, or David C. Hoffman tshuva, where he gives, on the one hand, here's the halacha, and now here's how we have to strategically interact with the world. You know, it's a fascinating approach.
Yeah.
It's relevant.
So we're going to have to continue to... All right, well, thank you so much, Rabbi Weiner, for not only this year, but for all that you do at Cedar Sinai with Amatai, and really tremendous, learned a lot. And thank you to everyone for joining us. And we look forward to future programming and in the near future. Thanks again.
Many brachas.